How do I know what I think until I see what I say? There's dirt on my hands.
Strong like a tree. The Green Notebook. Carried by military leaders around the world. Within those pages are sweat, tears, triumphs, and the hard-won lessons of life. Lessons worth sharing. Each week, the team dives into the notebooks of military leaders, business professionals, authors, athletes and coaches, and entertainers to share lessons and help you lead with the best version of yourself.
Today's episode is sponsored by Emblem Athletic, the best option out there for keeping your unit looking amazing with custom shirts, hoodies, and other gear. They're a veteran-owned business that specializes in making it easy for you. And if you've ever ordered unit gear, you know how difficult it can be. Emblem knows you have better things to do than design gear, collect money, and worst of all, sort through a bunch of shirts. Emblem takes care of everything, including, get this, free shipping worldwide. When it comes to something like a deployment shirt, you know you're going to have this for the rest of your life. So trust Emblem to deliver the best, guaranteed. Visit www.emblemathletic.com to get started with a free online store today.
Welcome to another episode of From the Green Notebook. I'm your host, Joe Byerly. Over the course of my career, I've had plenty of guy friends who were second-generation Army officers. And they told me stories about growing up, about how their dad would go on deployments or to training exercises, how their mom would keep the house together, and about their decision to follow in their father's footsteps. And I always thought it was cool how they could call their dad for career advice. And I feel like it's the image of the father and son that come to most people's minds when they hear the term second generation Army officer. So I thought it'd be awesome to hear from a mother and daughter who share the same bond. Valerie was able to call her mom for advice before she went to airborne school, before she was assigned to the 82nd Airborne Division, and before she left on her first deployment to Afghanistan, because her mom did all of those things. So I think you're really going to enjoy hearing their story and this week's episode. I know I did. So please welcome to the show, Michelle Hughes and Valerie Nostrand.
Good afternoon, Joe. First off, it's great to be talking with you, especially about two of my favorite topics, women in the military and my Army daughter. And I have to make that distinction because her little sister, Rachel, did 5.5 years in the Marine Corps. So as you can imagine, there's just a little bit of competition in our family. And if we don't give her a shout out, Valerie will never hear the end of it.
Hey, Joe, thanks for having us on. It's really exciting that we're getting to talk about women in the military, but also then our internal family legacy of service.
Yeah, well, speaking of your internal legacy of service, could you both just tell our listeners a little bit about your backgrounds and your careers?
So I'll start. I'm a human rights lawyer, and for the past 15 years, I've been working around the world helping countries that are trying to come out of conflict or a traumatic political transition rebuild their justice and governance systems. Since early last year, I stepped away from active field work and I'm currently doing doctoral research in the UK at the London School of Economics and working on a book on the intersection between international human rights and the art of war. But I think for our discussion today, my military career is probably more relevant to what we're going to talk about. So I'll go into a little bit of detail on that if you don't mind. I was commissioned as an Army intelligence officer out of the University of Florida in 1979. My year group was either the first or the second, I can't really remember, to be commissioned into the regular Army after the disestablishment of the Women's Army Corps in 1978. It was the immediate post-Vietnam, new all-volunteer Army era, and the first class of women at West Point hadn't even graduated yet, so it was actually a pretty exciting and very uncertain time to be coming in. Over the next decade, I was part of the first cohort of women assigned to the 82nd Airborne Division, the 8th woman officer to get Master Jump Wings, first woman officer to become a Golden Knight, and to this day, the only female officer to have actually performed with them. I was the first woman and possibly only to represent the Army as the chief of delegation to the World Military Parachuting Championships, the first woman officer to go through HALO qualification, one of the first women to command a line company in an armor division, one of the 189 women who served directly in combat in Panama, which paved the way for women to deploy in Gulf War I. And I was the handpicked head of the DOD intelligence support team for Pablo Escobar in Colombia. The mission I participated in is the subject of seasons 1 and 2 of the Netflix series Narcos. And along the way, and because of this and many other female firsts, I was honored by President Reagan at the White House as one of the top 10 working women in the country of 1985. And I'm listing all of these things, Joe, not to brag about them, even though I went through a period when I was getting a lot of personal attention, I wasn't really unique. Depending on your branch, back then, almost anything a woman was doing was some kind of first. And so, of course, I was no exception. I left active duty as a major in 1992 to start a family and go to law school, but I stayed in the reserves even while I was actively practicing litigation in a large regional law firm. I was mobilized, much to my surprise, since I wasn't really a drilling reservist, in the days immediately following the 9/11 attacks, and I served an involuntary recall for 2.5 years as UCOM's chief of intelligence production for the War on Terror. Later, as a senior Department of Defense civilian, I was by name requested to serve for over a year in Afghanistan as the senior rule of law advisor to the entire NATO Police and Ministry of Interior Development mission from 2010 to 2011 during the surge. And I returned to Afghanistan in between other conflict zones twice more in the years after that.
All right, what about you, Valerie?
Well, Joe, my career is a lot less impressive, but I did just start mine. So hopefully I've got a little bit of time. So I commissioned in 2015 through Army ROTC out of Penn State. I commissioned on active duty as a field artillery officer. This was kind of unique because we were in the first cohort of artillery officers, female-wise, that were able to go into brigade combat teams. Previously, female field artillery officers were only allowed to serve in fires brigades. So this was kind of a unique time. This is right before they started letting females into Ranger School as well. So then I commissioned, went through Bullock, did the usual schoolhouse stuff, and then I ended up showing up at the 82nd, where I served in 3rd Brigade. At the time, I was one of the first 3 company fire support officers in the brigade, and it was a really unique kind of challenge. At the time, we didn't have female armor officers or female infantry, so we were virtually alone, but it was very interesting and very exciting. And I like to think that we kind of helped pave the way for those female lieutenants to come in. And then I was also the first female platoon leader and fire direction officer in my line battery. Later, I deployed in support of Operation Freedom Sentinel. And there I was a fire support officer in Afghanistan for 9 months, worked with all of our NATO partners and allies. Especially I worked with the Afghans and basically helping do the handover. So it was a really unique experience and opportunity for us. And then I've kind of just continued this airborne service that my mom set up for me with the 82nd and now into 173rd.
Wow, that's extremely impressive. And, you know, just sitting here on this end of the screen and listening to you and your mom's bios, like there's so many questions I want to ask. So the first one's for Michelle. You mentioned deploying, and I'm curious, how did that affect you as a mother, having to leave your daughters to go serve?
Well, it was really hard. I mean, you know, in a nutshell, it was really hard. I almost hate talking about it, though, because these days, you know, literally thousands of moms have been deployed away from their kids multiple times in many cases. So I don't want to sound like I'm whining or anything. But it was different when I first came in. Until 9/11, I really didn't know any women who had deployed away from their children for long periods of time, other than the ones who did a hardship tour in Korea. Honestly, I had only served with a handful of women who even had kids, and certainly none of the more senior women officers did. I mean, back then, it was somewhat surprising if they were even married. Plus, part of the reason I had left active duty in the first place was because I didn't want to be an absentee mom. So it was a complete shock when I got called up. And even though I was in Europe and could bring the girls over for visits, it was still 2.5 years apart because all reservists were on short-term orders and we were all unaccompanied. Valerie and her little sister were 8 and 6 when I left, and they were 11 and 9 when I returned. Deploying to Afghanistan in 2010 was a bit different and in many ways easier. It was voluntary for one thing, and the girls were older for another. So when the NATO training mission commander and his Canadian deputy for police asked me to come over, I was able to discuss it with the girls, and we made a family decision to support the mission. It was still a very, very difficult year, and I missed a whole lot, but at least I felt like we had had some control over it. And that, at least for me, that made a bit of a difference.
Yeah, I grew up, neither one of my parents were in the military, so I never had to go through the experiences that you both went through as a mother and daughter, you know, and I've been on this side of it though, the last 17 years, and I've deployed a couple times, but I definitely have memories from that time period of, you know, being 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. And so Valerie, I wonder, like, do you remember when your mom deployed and how did that affect you?
Yeah, Joe. So it's really interesting to hear the way that she talks about it as kind of like a family decision and how hard or how easy things were. Cause I think from my perspective, at least, it was kind of the opposite. I think her leaving back right after 9/11 for Germany was actually a lot easier than you would assume for kids so young. At the time, it made sense. You know, she had to go away. She had to go help people. And that's how we understood it. And I think you're also a little bit more resilient when you're that age. Her deployments to Afghanistan as a senior civilian were actually, I think, more difficult, not necessarily because we were, you know, more concerned for her safety, which we actually were constantly, but I think it was more because she was leaving at a really pivotal time in our lives. I mean, I was in my senior year of high school, getting ready to make those decisions about where I was going to go to college. And my little sister was just starting high school. And then she missed, you know, about half of my college experience, which is when I was making these decisions about, you know, going on active duty. Where should I get stationed? What branch should I go into? You know, all those major life decisions she was missing out on. And I mean, she missed a few big milestones. One of them that I can think of, it sounds silly, but my senior prom, you know, that was actually something that like a mother and daughter normally share together. And we didn't get to have that. So I think those deployments were much more difficult for us.
Yeah, that whole prom thing was really, really hard. The girls sent me pictures of themselves in their dresses. And I remember sitting in my office in Kabul looking at those pictures and I just started crying. That was not a good day.
I can only imagine. And so Valerie, you know, you had these experiences growing up, you know, saying goodbye to your mom on a couple different occasions. And then you go off to Penn State and now like you're faced with the decision whether or not to serve. Could you talk a little bit about that? Did you guys talk about it as a family? Or is there any pressure from home for you to join up?
I think it's really interesting because while both my parents actually were retired active duty officers, my dad was in the Navy for 23 years, but I actually did not feel any pressure to join the military. If anything, it was kind of not necessarily a deterrent, but it was never highly encouraged. But they shouldn't have been surprised. I mean, I had a paratrooper Barbie growing up. And I think for me, it was really how involved in the sports I was that kind of got me thinking maybe the military was the right way to start my career. Because I really enjoyed being a team captain in high school and I enjoyed the camaraderie of being on a team. And the military to me kind of screamed that. And so it was a unique opportunity to do ROTC, pursuing my academic pursuits, but also then getting to commission. And I don't think I ever made, you know, the conscious effort to have a family discussion about it, whether or not I should actually do it. I think I was definitely more in the mindset of, you know, this is what I'm going to do. And then when it came to branching artillery, I was pretty adamant very early on that that was really the only branch I wanted to go into. Because at the time, it was the only combat arms branch open to me. I didn't pass any of my flight tests because I have terrible eyes. So, you know, I didn't have very many options and I didn't really want to go into combat support. So, yeah, I never really gave everybody the opportunity to weigh in. I listened to them, but I kind of made the decisions on my own.
That's awesome. And you were, I would argue, a trailblazer for women like back in your day. And now your daughter's doing this. So how did you react to her saying that she was going to join? And with that, did you have any concerns for her?
Well, first of all, I was really surprised because up until that point, Valerie had never given us any indication that she was interested in joining the military. So funny story, after she'd convinced me she was serious about it, I arranged for her to have an office call with a friend of mine who was a retired Marine Corps four-star general. And he was visiting the headquarters where I was working at the time. And so I arranged this meeting and I gave up my office and they were supposed to have 30 minutes. And he was just going to basically suss her out a bit. Well, their meeting went for an hour and a half. I was kind of pacing around in the hallway outside. Meeting went for an hour and a half. They come out of it. They look like they're best friends. And General Wilhelm says to me, later, privately, he says, your daughter is going to be one of the 10% who carries the rest of the 90% in this country. And I, of course, I was thrilled that that had gone so well. But the first thing I thought of was, I'm really just trying to get her to keep her room clean. So, you know, it was just, it was hard for me to wrap my head around it. But the more we talked it over, the more it became apparent to me that she really had thought this through. And so at that point, I was all in. But yeah, I had some real concerns. Like, for one thing, I was really worried about backlash. I hadn't raised Valerie to lay back or lay low. And so I knew if she went into the Army, she was going to try to push every boundary she could. But during my career, every woman I knew who had stood out too much, especially for female firsts, had just gotten crushed. Women like Captain Kathleen Wilder, who tried to go through Special Forces Q course in 1980, or Captain Linda Bray, who led troops in combat in Panama. I mean, these women were my peers, but they had become too visible. They were seen as having pushed too hard, and they were just eviscerated, you know, personally and professionally, not just by their peers, but also by their leaders. It's as though you were only allowed to stand out so much. And I had just seen so many super talented, strong women whose careers were derailed because they had apparently gone too far. It worried me. And I had experienced this when I went down to Columbia in 1990. I was a by-name pick by the Southcom commander based on my performance during the invasion of Panama. So I thought I was golden, and I got down to Bogota, and the mill group commander literally made it his mission to try to make me fail. A college friend of mine who was assigned to the mill group told me that they were told, quote, to put me back in my place, end quote. I had been encountering that attitude the entire time I had been in the Army, even before I went to Columbia. So for about 10 years at that point. And I just did not want my daughter to have to suffer through that same thing. And I was also worried about isolation. Being a woman in the military can be really lonely at times. You have to watch your back. You don't always know who you can trust. And if you're in a more non-traditional career field, and I knew Valerie would choose one of those, it can feel like you don't have any real peers because all your peers are men. On the positive side, I was excited for her. Military service is like no other, as you know. And I wanted her to know the really deep friendships and the kind of camaraderie that you only get with your brothers and sisters in arms. I wanted her to know what it feels like to serve a cause that's greater than yours alone. And I wanted her to feel what it's like to find yourself living history as it's made. And sometimes even making it instead of watching it from the sidelines. So I set aside my concerns. I determined I would do everything in my power to help her to do whatever it was she wanted to do.
Today's episode is also sponsored by veteran-owned Alpha Coffee Company. Their premium 100% Arabica coffee is freshly roasted for a bold, delicious flavor. Alpha Coffee supports veteran charities and has donated over 19,000 bags of coffee to deployed troops. They also offer a combinable 10% military discount and 10% off for subscriptions. Taste the Alpha difference. Purchase their coffee today from their online store or via Amazon Prime.
Wow, thank you for that, Michelle. And Valerie, I mean, you've grown up with your mom being your mom. Did any of her accomplishments or the experiences she shared with you influence you in any way as you were going into the military?
I mean, I think it's kind of safe to say that inadvertently they kind of did, even though it was never, you know, I already kind of mentioned it was never really like highly encouraged that I, you know, run straight to the military, you know, after graduating. But I mean, I grew up hearing stories about being a Golden Knight and being in the 82nd. And so I think that those experiences that she went through, especially in the 82nd, really did subconsciously play a huge role. Because when I was, you know, commissioning and you get to pick your posts and you're waiting anxiously for that, for me, I only wanted to go one place. There was really no second choice. I only wanted to go to the 82nd. I knew I wanted to jump out of planes. I knew I wanted to be a jump master and I wanted to do all of those things, really be an airborne leader. So I think for me, that's what I took from her career the most. The other big lesson I did take away was definitely the isolation part. And it's something that I didn't initially encounter. You know, you're safe in the schoolhouse, but when I got to the 82nd, that's when I started to really kind of see that and feel that. And I mean, I had some interesting experiences early on, but also some really supportive people that I ended up finding and people I could really trust. So I was happy to have learned those lessons early. And I've kind of sought out to help some of my younger peers in those kind of times of need, because those are difficult times and they still happen today.
I love that. And so you grew up watching your mom serve, and then your mom retires, she's out of the military, and now the roles are reversed. Like, Michelle, you're watching Valerie serve. Are there any moments so far in Valerie's career that just stand out to you, something that you're just super proud of, or like kind of just brings a tear to your eye every time you think about it?
There are so many. Certainly her commissioning was a great moment. And the fact that she had branched field artillery had particular meaning for me, because my commissioning year was the first year that women were allowed to branch FA, and I really wanted to do it. But women at that time were only allowed to serve with strategic units, so it really wasn't a viable career field, and I chose MI instead. The Valerie was going to be able to serve unrestricted as an artillery officer and in the 82nd Airborne was just amazing to me when she got her orders. And then, of course, there was her graduation from airborne school, which was incredibly emotional, tears all around. Being a paratrooper was such a huge part of my military identity. It was one of the few elite opportunities that I could grab. And my accomplishments as a paratrooper, well, those things gave me a confidence that I was able to transpose into all of my follow-on assignments. And my civilian legal career, my academic work, and my civilian development work in conflict zones. So to see Valerie following that same empowering path was incredibly meaningful. And then, of course, her deployment to Afghanistan was significant for a whole host of personal and professional reasons.
Yeah, and Afghanistan, Michelle, is where Valerie and I first met. And, you know, I got to hear her talk a lot about you and, you know, Valerie, when she was in the 82nd, when we met, and she was very proud of the fact that, you know, she was airborne in the 82nd. I'm not in the 82nd. I'm an armor officer. She reminded me of that quite a bit. I've got to ask both of you, I feel like a lot of times we focus on these like multi-generational, like male families in the military, especially when you're talking about the 82nd, you know, like we were both in the 82nd, we were both jump master or whatever. This is the first time in my limited experience with the airborne community of hearing about a mother and daughter. So how does that feel for both of you to share this legacy together of both having served in the 82nd Airborne?
So I think for me, I didn't realize how unique we were until it was my airborne school graduation. They call everybody up who's a multi-generational paratrooper, and you get your wings pinned on first. And I remember looking around, I immediately saw my mom. You know, she was the only woman standing up there. And then I was also the only woman standing up there to get my wings pinned. And I think that's when that kind of struck me, was this is a truly unique family and a truly unique legacy. Because for me, it was just kind of, you know, you grow up with somebody so strong, you just assume like all women do this. They all are trailblazers. It's totally normal. But that was definitely the first experience that kind of made me realize how unique we were. And then my deployment to Afghanistan was also super special because I spent a lot of time in the same place that she had been in. And I used to think about that every time I would travel around, like, wow, my mom might have flown these same flight paths. She might have looked at the same mountains. She could have walked the halls of this building. And so it was really unique. And I had a lot of moments like that on my deployment, especially, that made me really think about how great our family legacy is and how much you know, we want to keep giving to this country and how much we love to serve.
For me, you know, I've already spoken about how much her getting her wings meant to me, but the 82nd thing, that was a whole nother dimension. I had set my sights on getting into the 82nd in 1978 when I was at advance camp at Fort Bragg as a cadet. It was the elite, you know, the place to be, but the assignment wasn't open to women yet. I couldn't even request it. So when I later arrived at Fort Bragg as a second lieutenant at Corps, and they had, in the meantime, allowed about 100 or so women into the division as an experiment, just gotten there, which the division commander vehemently opposed, by the way, I set my sights on getting transferred over. I was really fortunate that the 18th Airborne Corps G2 was genuinely supportive of women in the military. And while I was a platoon leader in a Corps SIGINT unit, he saw something in me that caused him to take a personal interest in my career. So he made a call to the MI battalion commander in the 82nd and told him that he needed to give me a shot. And I remember that when I went to thank the G2, Colonel Williams, he told me that if the 82nd ever deployed, he would expect me to cut off my hair and duct tape my chest flat so that no one would spot me on the ramp and pull me out of the mission. And, you know, I'm guessing he probably wouldn't be allowed to say something like that today. But back then, to hear that from a revered bird colonel with 4 Vietnam tours under his belt, I was actually really grateful and flattered that he thought I could do it. So anyway, when I arrived, there were somewhere around 120 women total, 16 of us officers in the entire division. It was really something. Wherever you went, you were stared at, challenged, harassed, deliberately ignored. I used to occasionally jump master down in an infantry battalion. I had a skydiving friend who was a first sergeant there, and it was a way for me to log mass tacks. And, you know, those poor guys, they did not know what to do with me in charge. It's like it was just beyond their comprehension. And so while much of my time in the division was difficult, honestly, that part was actually a lot of fun. And I wanted that for Valerie. I wanted her to be part of the best unit I knew. I wanted her to have both the pain and the excitement of being truly airborne, not just wearing the wings, but living it. And I like to think that between us, we've each helped to open doors in the division for the women who are looking for that kind of challenge and for those who are looking for that kind of specialized service.
Yeah, that's amazing. And, you know, in addition to being in the 82nd and being jump master qualified, you both deploy to Afghanistan. So I can think about all the times, like I called my parents to be like, hey, you know, I've got this issue with the house or this issue with the kids. Could you give me some advice on this? But in your instance, Valerie, like, did you call your mom and say, hey, mom, I'm deploying to Afghanistan. Could you give me some advice? And if you did, Michelle, what are some of the things that you told her before she deployed?
So we did have those conversations, but they were kind of, you know, different because obviously, like, she wasn't really going to be able to help me with anything for my job. And, you know, she'd done it as a civilian instead of in uniform. So it was definitely going to be a slightly different experience. And it was a different time politically and everything going on in the world. It was just completely different. But I did ask for a lot of advice. And really the advice I was looking for was more on kind of how to take care of myself, you know, mentally dealing with some of those difficulties. And a lot of them we've kind of touched on, but that feeling of being alone, because, you know, you have a lot of those moments and you can only be as good at your job as you are if you're, you know, taking care of yourself. And she'd always talk to me about, you know, what it was like to be the only woman in a room and to be the only female briefer. And I felt that almost on a daily basis, I would normally be the only woman in the room and I would be the only woman briefing. But having the kind of the confidence that she'd instilled in me that, you know, you can do this, it doesn't matter, it doesn't make a difference. I think that was really important for me and getting me mentally prepared to do the job that I needed to do. So that was the big piece of advice that I got from her. And then she also, throughout my deployment, used to send me books on Afghanistan, but not necessarily on like the history of Afghanistan. A lot of times they were focused on different regions and provinces and then the women of Afghanistan, because it's important to remember that, how much their lives have changed in the last 20 years. And those books were super influential to me. They helped kind of shape the way that I began to think about the country and think about my job. And then they were also kind of a legacy for me because I was able to pass them around to other women at the camp, you know, for everybody from NATO civilians to our uniform partners and allies. So that was kind of a really cool, unique little book club, basically, that got created based off of the books that she used to send me.
I did not know that. I did not know that they were getting passed around like that, but that really pleases me. That makes me very happy.
While we're on that subject, I'm sitting here right now, Michelle, holding a copy of The Punishment of Virtue, which Valerie gave me with her notes in it, her highlights. And when she handed it to me, she was like, hey, Joe, like, here's a different way to think about this war. So to both of you, thank you.
You're welcome. And let me add to the recommendations there that don't be put off as a guy by the title. You should really read The Sewing Circles of Herat, which was another one that I sent her.
Thank you so much for that, Michelle. So what advice did you give her before she deployed, besides giving her a great library of books throughout the deployment?
Well, you know, I told her a lot of things and she's already mentioned, you know, several of them. So before she went, I made a trip, a pilgrimage, if you will, down to North Carolina to see her. And I thought really hard about what I was going to tell her before she left, what I wanted her to carry with her from me. And I did tell her to take care of herself in body, mind, and spirit. I told her to be careful about her personal safety. I told her to trust her gut, you know, on who and what she could trust and where, and to act on it. And I did talk about the loneliness and not to be intimidated. I actually did try to give her some insights into the overall mission because I knew, you know, we were on very different missions. I had been OEF and I knew when she got out there, the mission was much more constrained than OEF had been. But additionally, my role in Afghanistan had been very unique in that I had been chartered, if you will, to literally travel all over the country, sometimes even embedded in Afghan police units with only my TERP and a bodyguard. So I had seen 16 provinces, 36 districts in a way that Valerie never would. And I wanted to share some of my insights with her because I wanted her to have a better appreciation of why she was there and what her presence and her mission meant to the Afghans that I had worked so closely with. And as she said, you know, I tried to give her different perspectives because the whole time she was on her mission, I wanted to keep trying to give her different perspectives on the importance of what she was doing and why. So, you know, definitely I was carefully selecting these books and I absolutely wanted her to hear women's voices and women's perspectives. So she got one a month the whole time she was there. And they were carefully considered. And then, you know, I always told her that deployments change you and redeployment is hard. I started talking about redeployment with her before she deployed. And I told her that no matter what, I understood that it does change a person and that I would be there to help her navigate her new normal when she got back, that I got it. And of course, you know, I always told her how much I loved her and how proud I was of who she was and what she was doing.
Yeah, talking about redeployment, that's one thing that you hear about all the time as you come up in the military, but until you really experience it, you just don't know. So I think that's awesome that, you know, not only are you able to give her, you know, like this great, you know, motherly advice and all this other life advice, you're also able to help her out with this one aspect that so many people struggle with.
Yeah, you know, I think that's one of those things that we ought to pay more attention to as a parent who had deployed in my own career multiple times. I was actually really grateful that I understood how hard it is that I had gone through that. And sometimes I think maybe the military these days in particular with all of the multiple deployments in so many difficult, complex places, I think the military could do a better job of preparing family members. Well, I think the military needs to figure out how to do a better job of preparing family members to help their service members navigate that new normal, because you're not the same.
No, not at all. And I feel like we could do an entire episode just on this topic alone, because it is, it's so important. And so as we wind down this interview, I just have to ask, like, for Valerie, what is the biggest lesson that you've taken away from your mother's service?
That's a really hard question, Joe. I think the biggest lesson for me was, you know, you're giving so much to the military and to the country and to everybody. And you've got to remember that you got to do it as long as you love it. And then you have to take care of yourself and your family as well. And so don't ever feel bad about some of those small decisions you have to make on a daily basis, whether it's prioritizing your family or trying to prioritize yourself. But then also the fact that we're doing such an amazing thing for so many people. And for me, that was the whole reason I wanted to serve in the military, was I wanted to take care of my friends and family. It's great to think about everybody else, but those are really the people I care about the most that I wanted to protect and take care of.
What about you, Michelle? What have you learned from Valerie's service?
Well, I love this question because it's something I think about a lot. What Valerie and, in fact, both my daughters have taught me is just how limitless the possibilities really can be. The standards that Valerie has to meet today, both physically and mentally, are so much higher than they were for me. And to watch the way in which she has attacked every new challenge, every tough task, and met every single standard has shown me that anything is possible for the women of her generation. And think about it. You know, I'm her mom, you know. I don't just know her public face. I know her limitations and her weaknesses too. So objectively, the fact that she has pushed through them with such determination and strength has actually inspired me to continue pushing forward in my own life. Really, I mean that. And furthermore, there are days when we get off the phone and I just have to take a moment because I'm absolutely in awe of her. And you know, that's a great thing for any mom to be able to say. So I treasure it, just like I treasure her.
Thank you so much for that. And thanks to both of you. As I got to know Valerie and know her story, I got to hear a lot about you, Michelle, through Valerie. And so, you know, for a long time now, I've been wanting to figure out how to capture both of your experiences, not only as mother and daughter, but as two people who serve this country. And so I really appreciate both of you taking time to come on the show today and talk with us and share your story with us. Thank you.
Well, my pleasure. Anytime I can talk about Valerie, it's a good day.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Joe. I'm really excited that we got the opportunity to not only kind of record this for ourselves, but then also to share our story with other people.
Thank you again to all our listeners for joining us on another episode of From the Green Notebook. Check us out at fromthegreennotebook.com, where you can download past episodes, read some of our previous blog posts, and sign up for our monthly reading list and Sunday email. If you enjoy the podcast so far, please subscribe and give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. And follow us on Twitter at FTG Notebook, as well as Instagram and Facebook. You can find us by just searching From the Green Notebook. So this is Jacob Goronsky signing off. And hope you tune in to our next episode. I came from the mud, there's dirt on my hands. Strong like a tree, there's roots where I stand. Oh, I've been running from the law.